Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Christy Rosa. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. Onc Live is also home to the State of the Science Summits. These summits, which take place throughout the United States, are dedicated to the latest research in various therapeutic areas. That brings us to today's episode. We recently traveled to New York City, New York, for a State of the Science Summit on multiple myeloma. We met with experts from Mount Sinai Hospital to gather updates on emerging treatment strategies in multiple myeloma, including headway made with CAR T-cell therapies, the role of genomics, the shift toward personalized medicine, and progress made with maintenance therapies. First, we spoke with co-chair of the meeting, Sundar Jagannath, MBBS, director of the Multiple Myeloma Program, and a professor of medicine, hematology, and medical oncology at the Tisch Cancer Institute at Mount Sinai School of Medicine, who provided an overview on the current treatment landscape of relapsed refractory multiple myeloma. In recent years, the space has seen a slew of novel agents and combination regimens approved. In our interview, Jagannath highlighted additional agents moving through the pipeline, such as isatuximab, and exciting research being done with dual targeting antibodies and CAR T-cell therapies.
Today, I wanted to capture how myeloma is being viewed and how it is managed and what are the dramatic changes that are happening both in the understanding of the biology of the disease as well as management of the disease. On the biology side, because of next generation sequencing, single cell RNA and single cell DNA sequencing, CyTOF, and many other technologies which have been put into place, we are able to understand the disease much better. On the treatment side, there are exciting new treatment modalities that have come, especially immuno-oncology, that includes bispecific antibodies and CAR T cells therapy. These treatments have shown that you can still eradicate the myeloma even after it has failed all the currently available treatments. More importantly, there is advancement where we can see whether the cancer has been eradicated completely, the depth of response. The assessment of the depth of response has continued to improve. Now we are able to detect even 1 in a million cancer cells still residing in the patient's bone marrow, or presence of circulating tumor cells, or DNA from the tumor cells, or even a very small amount of paraprotein made by the tumor cells in circulation. So these technologies have made sure that have we really eradicated the disease with the treatment available with us now, and how long to treat the patient. This has improved the overall quality of the patient, not only the quantity of life, but even the quality of life. Right now, we know this year, FDA has recently approved selinexor for the treatment of myeloma. So that's a new drug added to the treatment armamentarium of myeloma. So then we are looking at two classes of drugs I'm very excited about. There are antibodies with two specificity. One arm of the antibody binding to the cancer cell, myeloma cell, and the other arm binding to the CD3 or the T cells, bringing them together to wipe out the myeloma. So this is a much more effective way of getting rid of the tumor cells. This is well tolerated, especially for elderly patients. And the other development is the genetic modification of the patient's own T cell, so-called gene therapy, where you have the CAR T cells, engineered CAR T cells are given to the patient. And these are programmed to wipe out the myeloma cells. And these cells are living drugs, so they expand. As the more cancer, there is more expansion of these T cells, and they wipe out the cancer. So the patient go into complete remission, MRD negative status consistently. And this has been shown in patients who have been treated with all the available agents now, FDA approved agent, and the cancer has progressed. This is still able to get rid of the cancer completely, And some of the patients, these remissions have lasted more than a year, which is really exciting. So I believe CAR T cells are very, very exciting, and this will play a very important role in the future. And the bispecific antibodies are also very exciting. So I think in the future, more and more patients with myeloma will be cured.
Next up was co-chair Ajay Chari, MD, an associate professor of medicine and the director of clinical research in the multiple myeloma program and the associate director of clinical research, Mount Sinai Clinical Trials Office at the Mount Sinai Hospital, who highlighted the Cassiopeia and Griffin trials, which examined the addition of daratumumab to existing triplet therapies in transplant-eligible patients with myeloma. According to Chari, researchers are trying to answer whether four agents are more effective than three in this population. Chari also discussed options available to transplant-ineligible patients and shared updates in smoldering myeloma. Listen on to hear more.
Our approach to transplant-eligible patients historically has been triplet therapy with bortezomib, blend, dex, or RVD, VRD. And we really didn't have phase 3 data for that, but the SWOG study showed that triplet therapy was better than doublet, although that was for patients without the intent to transplant. And so now the question is, can we do better than that? We know that from several studies that the best partner for PIs are probably lenalidomide as opposed to cyclophosphamide. But the new question coming up is, are four drugs better than three? And we have two versions of this question being answered. One on the European side, which was Cassiopeia study, bortezomib, thalidomide, and dex plus or minus daratumumab. And this study showed that not only was the primary endpoint a stringent CR improved from 20% in the control arm VTD to 29% with the addition of Dara, but also, interestingly, with only a relatively short follow-up of 18 months, there was a significant improvement in progression-free survival with the addition of Dara. So I think that's really great news, and it supports what we all think, that Dara is a really efficacious drug, and it improves efficacy with minimal additional toxicity. There was slight decrease in stem cell yield and more need of plerixafor, but overall, I think the PFS results and the stringent CR results are very compelling. The other study that was also recently released, the press release, we don't yet have the raw data, is the Griffin study, where patients in the U.S. were randomized to RVD plus or minus Dara. And in this study, we saw again that the rates of stringent CR were improved, the rates of MRD negativity were improved, so also supporting the addition of Dara frontline. Of course, we don't have the details of stem cell collection, and so those data are still ongoing. And so I think this shed some light that perhaps the future might be quad therapy. In terms of consolidation with transplant, the IFM study still speaks for itself with a higher PFS relative to non-transplant. Consolidation, the US study didn't show really a benefit to consolidation, whereas the European study did, the EMN study. And so probably that has to do with how well we induce patients and how many cycles of chemo we give. And that may be the reason why, if in Europe you're only giving Cyborg D for 3 to 4 cycles, there's a benefit to consolidation and second transplant in high-risk patients. But in the U.S., we didn't see those benefits in the Stamina study. And finally, with maintenance, Len maintenance has recently been reported to improve not only PFS with a hazard ratio of 0.5, but overall survival. The newer data that we have from recent publications and presentations is the role of ixazomib. And the ixazomib study did improve PFS, but not as much as we would have liked, only a hazard ratio of 0.7. But unfortunately, the study design was discontinuing ixazomib at 2 years, so it wasn't treated till progression. But no risk of secondary malignancy, so that's also kind of interesting. So a lot of new data for this transplant-eligible population, and very compelling new information. This management of smoldering myeloma is challenging, and I think there's a lot of interest in treating patients earlier and earlier. And it's a two-part question, because what is the right group of patients to treat? In other words, do we have a reproducible risk stratification system? And the second part is, what is the best treatment? So at this year's ASCO meeting, Dr. Loniel presented the results of the ECOG study, where patients were randomized to either lenalidomide or observation, and it was a randomized phase 3 study. And in this study, we saw a significant reduction in the risk of progression with lenalidomide treatment, 91% at 3 years progression-free versus 60% with the observation arm. Very impressive hazard ratio as well. And so this suggests that Len maintenance is favorable. However, there's some limitations because first, this study included all types of myeloma, smoldering myeloma, including some low-risk patients and intermediate risk, and those didn't seem to benefit as much because their natural history is better. So that's one challenge, and when we look at this truly high-risk component, it was a relatively small number. The second thing is we don't really know a lot of details about the endpoints. So for example, how many patients had CRAB symptoms in the observation arm that were minimized by the use of len maintenance? We don't yet have PFS2 or overall survival data, obviously. There was concern about some toxicity with higher rates of secondary malignancy. And also 50% of the len treatment arm actually discontinued due to toxicity. So I think what this study tells us is that we are on the right track with asking these questions of treating smoldering myeloma, but I think we need a little bit more work. And the other part of my talk, I'm thinking the way we think about smoldering myeloma, I think needs to evolve from looking at patients as just as a photograph to looking at a movie. And what we showed in our data is it's not just how patients are risk stratified at baseline, but what happens to them in that first year of treatment. And those patients whose M spike goes up, light chains go up, whose hemoglobin drops, but none of them meet CRAB criteria, those are the patients that probably merit further study. But that needs to be further validated. But I think it's an exciting time to look at this earlier treatment question for myeloma, smoldering myeloma patients.
The field of relapsed refractory multiple myeloma has seen several changes over the past few years, said Joshua Richter, MD, assistant professor of medicine at the Tisch Cancer Institute in the Mount Sinai School of Medicine. And with the addition of several drugs into the paradigm, it's becoming increasingly challenging to determine the optimal approach for managing patients with the disease. In our interview, Richter discussed the recent approval of selinexor for patients with relapsed refractory disease and work that's being done with triplet and quadruplet regimens.
So the ELOQUENT-3 trial was a really great trial in that it really brought to light a new way of utilizing a pomalidomide-based regimen in the relapse setting. So the earlier ELOQUENT studies looked at the combination of elotuzumab and lenalidomide, and they were quite good, but we see even better improvements when we combine elotuzumab with pomalidomide. Besides the fact that it has improvement over the doublet of pomalidomide index itself, the other benefit of the trial is now we have a way of dosing the drug once a month instead of every 2 weeks. In the early ELOQUENT trials, the dose of elotuzumab remained 10 mg per kg every other week, but here we can crank it up to 20 mg per kg and dose it once a month. So it's both a very effective regimen for patients and very convenient. Isatuximab is a really fascinating new drug that was actually filed. So we have a PDUFA date of April 30th, 2020, based on the ICARIA data, the combination of isatuximab plus pomalidomide and dexamethasone. Isatuximab is very similar to daratumumab in that it's an anti-CD38 antibody. It's unclear if it may have some advantages over daratumumab. In the laboratory, it seems to. We're still looking to see how that translates to the clinic. One of the big benefits of isatuximab is the first few doses are over a much shorter time than daratumumab. First dose of daratumumab can take 8 to 10 hours. First dose of isatuximab is probably closer to 4. So it allows yet another option for patients who may not be able to take those longer infusions. You know, what have we learned? Well, it's 2019. We know that one drug is better than zero. We know that two drugs is better than one. We know that three drugs is better than two, but is four better than three? And we don't know that answer yet, except for some rare cases. The Alcyone trial showed us that four drugs is better than three in the setting of upfront transplant ineligible patients. Then the quadruplet of DARA-VMP appears to be better than VMP. So the big question is, what about transplant eligible patients? And what about relapse refractory patients? The ongoing Griffin study combining daratumumab, bortezomib, lenalidomide, and dexamethasone is an extremely active and very promising regimen, and in my opinion, is likely to be one of the standards in the future. So as we begin to understand an individual's disease, the use of precision medicine will allow us to know who will need a triplet and who will need a quadruplet, but quadruplets are clearly going to be part of our paradigm for the future. I'm really excited about the approval of selinexor. It's a brand new class of agent, a selective inhibitor of nuclear export, and the most amazing thing about a new class is that we can start combining it with our other myeloma drugs, and it's not just one new drug, it's many new regimens. So the approval comes from the STORM data, the combination of selinexor and dexamethasone, and the drug clearly has activity in heavily refractory patients. I'm really looking forward to the upcoming data from the Boston and the STOMP trial, where we combine selinexor with drugs such as Velcade, bortezomib, daratumumab, pomalidomide, lenalidomide, and the reality is that we know triplet combinations are really the current standard. So I'm really looking forward to being able to use this drug in triplets based off of that new data. But the really exciting thing is there are patients who otherwise had no other options, and this new class offers them a new treatment answer.
Another emerging treatment that's generating a great deal of excitement is CAR T-cell therapy. Deepu Maduri, MD, an assistant professor of hematology and medical oncology at the Mount Sinai Hospital, stopped by to discuss the promising work that's being done with this approach in multiple myeloma. For example, the ongoing Phase 1 CRB-401 trial is evaluating the BCMA-targeted CAR T-cell product BB2121 in patients who previously received three or more lines of therapy. Updated data have shown an overall response rate of 8% and a progression-free survival of 11.8 months with the agent. In our interview, Maduri projected the potential impact of this therapy in myeloma and shed light on the optimal population to receive this treatment.
The key takeaway is there's quite a lot of CAR T-cell therapies, and most of them are BCMA. And so it's really important to figure out and wait for the data to come out in all these trials, because right now every trial excludes the other when it comes to BCMA. So if you're doing a bispecific BCMA, you can't do bispecific CAR T and vice versa. So it'd be interesting to see when it comes to putting patients on these studies, like which one are you going to choose? Is it based on neurotoxicity? Is it based on how much CRS is they having? Is it the overall response rate? And what do you do if somebody fails a bispecific, you know, and CAR T-cell relapse? I mean, every year we're starting to get new and new therapies approved. Just last week, we got selinexor approved. And now I think the KARMA, the BB2121 pivotal trial has completed enrollment, and so they're going to the FDA early next year. And I think Janssen is going to follow suit soon after, probably end of next year. So we're going to start having actually commercially available CAR T therapy, which is going to change the paradigm of how we treat very quickly, because a lot of patients are wanting CAR T therapy. And we also want to see, like I said, if you failed a bispecific BCMA, and now in real world, if we are going to give them this expensive therapy, the question is it going to work if they've had it or not? Most of the trials include if you've had to have a PI, an IMID, and a CD38, and if you failed all three of those, then you're considered eligible for the study. The other interesting thing is now CAR T-cells is being used earlier and earlier in earlier lines. So if you've had one line of relapse, KARMA 2, is if you failed one line and you've had an exposure to a PI and an IMID, and if you've had an autotransplant but relapsed within 18 months, or there's another arm where you haven't had a transplant, but you're considered high risk if you relapse within 18 months. So we're trying to use it up front to see what the advantage is going to be. Plus there's KARMA 3, which is a randomized study with the DARA-based regimen versus CAR T. So I think all of these, right now, they use it for patients who've kind of exhausted a PI, IMID, and a CD38. But soon we're going to see what happens with CAR T as it moves up earlier and earlier. I know there's a BMT-CTN trial that's in the process of being written and coming out that's going to possibly use CAR T as consolidation after transplant. So that'll be very interesting to see, can you use CAR T as consolidation? Can you use it after one line? Are you going to have a longer PFS than, say, somebody who's failed, you know, three lines or five lines?
Novel antibody-based therapies are also being examined in several Phase 1 trials for multiple myeloma, according to Hearn J. Cho, MD, PhD, an associate professor of medicine, hematology, and medical oncology at the Mount Sinai Hospital. In our interview, Cho provided insight into two emerging technologies, antibody-drug conjugates and bispecific T-cell engagers. Listen on to hear more.
I chose to focus on two emerging technologies. The first is antibody-drug conjugates. This is a technology where monoclonal antibodies that recognize targets on the surface of multiple myeloma cells are directly conjugated to chemotherapeutic agents, which then are delivered directly to the myeloma cell by the antibody. And the concept is somewhat like a guided missile. So the antibody delivers the chemotherapy payload directly to the myeloma cell where it should exert its killing effect. The second technology that we were discussing is T-cell redirecting agents. So these are also known as bispecific T-cell engaging agents. Similar to the ADCs, they have one antigen recognizing site that sticks to targets that are on the surface of the myeloma cells. Importantly, they have a second antigen binding site, which typically is directed against a molecule called CD3. CD3 is part of the T cell receptor complex, which is expressed on T cells, which are the killing cells of the immune system. And these agents, one end sticks to the myeloma cell through their target, which is typically something like BCMA. The other end sticks to the T cell and activates it at the same time. So it brings them physically together, activates the T cell, allowing it to kill the myeloma cell. So these are both, in both classes of agents are currently in clinical trials for multiple myeloma. The ADC data that has been published thus far shows that they have a good response rate, fairly high, but they have unique toxicities that we have to be careful of, particularly toxicities in the eye. In the bispecific agents, similarly, early data is very promising in that they have good response rates and very deep responses, but there are also adverse effects, such as what's known as cytokine release syndrome, which is typically characterized as an overactivation of the immune system. And these are similar toxicities to what is seen in, for example, CAR T cells. And it highlights the fact that we are manipulating the immune system with very powerful agents. And so they can have very profound effects, not only on the tumor cells, but on the patients as well. There are several different types of bispecific T cell engagers currently in clinical investigation. The majority of these target BCMA, which is expressed in myeloma cells. And I would highlight that several of these are advanced in clinical trials, completing phase one studies. And as I mentioned, they have very promising response rates and deep responses. I would point out two other agents that are currently in investigation. The first is a Janssen molecule which targets a protein called GPRC5D. And GPRC5D is a member of a class of receptors called 7 transmembrane G protein coupled receptors. It is uniquely highly expressed in myeloma cells and one or two other tissues. And this agent has shown very promising activity in early phase clinical trials. We're expecting a report at ASH this year. And it is an alternative to the BCMA targeted strategies, which have been largely dominating the field. The second is an agent produced by a company called Glenmark, and that one targets CD38, which also is the target of daratumumab, which is already approved for multiple myeloma. And it's actually testing a principle which has not been deeply investigated yet, which is if a monoclonal antibody such as daratumumab is effective in myeloma targeting CD38, will a bispecific agent, which then directs T cells to kill cells that are expressing CD38, have similar effectiveness or even greater effectiveness? And the reason that's important is because we often think of the targets as just something that's decorating the surface of a myeloma cell, distinguishing it from others and allowing us to target it. But all of those proteins have a function. They do something. And myeloma cells are the malignant counterpart of plasma cells, which are a normal part of the immune system. So it is possible that by interfering or targeting the function of that target on the myeloma cell, you may either increase or decrease the effectiveness of a therapy that's going after it. So it's important to see how these agents work, not only from their response rates and their depths of response, but also doing correlative studies, understanding how the immune system is changed when you use these agents.
We closed out the night with Samir Parekh, MBBS, an associate professor of medicine, hematology, and medical oncology at Mount Sinai Hospital, who discussed the role of genomics in multiple myeloma and how understanding more about the biology of the disease has opened up the door for personalized medicine. In our interview, Parekh highlighted ongoing research being done at his institution and how genomics can ultimately be used to further improve patient outcomes.
I'm going to talk about three applications of genomics in multiple myeloma. The first part of the talk describes our work on big data set analysis. We have specific collaborators with expertise in modeling big data sets by network analysis and using the MMRF Compass data set, which has more than 1,000 patients. We've been actually able to find new prognostic patterns in myeloma, new therapeutic targets, and new subclasses that may also have therapeutic implications. We are now expanding this work with the help of a company that spun off Mount Sinai called Semaphore, where we are actually sequencing 1,000 patients at Sinai to add to this cohort and build comparison cohorts of relapse patients to understand what drives relapse and how we can therapeutically target it. The second part of the talk talks about a more urgent application of our work. Majority of our patients at Sinai are referred from outside practices after exhausting multiple lines of treatment and facing a dire consequence if they don't have a new treatment option. A lot of these patients can go on to clinical trials, but some of them are not eligible. And for these specific patients, we actually designed a clinical trial where we would rapidly sequence their myeloma cells, and using a bioinformatic software pipeline that we developed at Sinai called Daphne, we are able to actually find treatment options for these patients, both by looking at the DNA and RNA. We published a paper in JCO Precision Medicine last year where, to our surprise, we actually found the majority of the patients had a drug that was repurposable from other cancers, and we tested these drugs. Some were skin cancer treatment, some were kidney cancer treatments, some were lung cancer treatments, and they actually worked in myeloma, and patients were able to get salvaged and go on to significant milestones. This was very gratifying, and based on this, we are planning to again sequence a larger cohort of patients systematically, both to understand how these treatments affect subclones and how clonal evolution develops, so that we can plan the next wave of treatments for the relapsed refractory myeloma patients. The last part of the talk addresses the implications of genomics in immunology. One of our major collaborations is with a world-famous vaccine expert, Nina Bhardwaj, who runs a program at Sinai where using genomics we can identify antigens that are created from mutations in the tumor, and then we can exploit these antigens to actually drive immunogenicity against a tumor by personalizing a cancer vaccine approach. We have a GMP facility on our floor that makes these vaccines, and then we can deliver them to myeloma patients. We've already tested this in several patients with promising results, and we have now begun to expand these efforts into the early or smoldering myeloma patient population. We are using genomics in multiple ways to both identify new drivers to understand myeloma better, to find treatments for patients, and to find the impact of genomics of the tumor on the microenvironment around the tumor. And all of these things will help us treat patients better. In terms of prognosis specifically, we are looking at RNA expression patterns, sort of building a new Google map of myeloma, so as to speak, and finding what parts of the map are associated with bad myeloma. So if you go to that area, if a patient has expression of a particular set of genes, we can actually predict who's going to do better or who's going to do worse. In terms of immunology, we can use the neoantigens both to treat patients but also to track them, because these tumor mutations elicit T cell responses that can be the most direct measure of the immunotherapeutic drugs that are being used in myeloma, including IMiDs and monoclonal antibodies.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Onc Live On Air. Check back on Wednesdays for new interviews from our State of the Science summits. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. We have several upcoming State of the Science summits for those interested in attending. If you would like to learn more about the recent progress made with precision medicine and oncology, you can sign up for the September 12th State of the Science Summit in Dallas, Texas. We'll also be hosting a State of the Science Summit on September 25th in Salt Lake City, Utah, which will focus on updates in lung cancer. To check out the list of upcoming meetings or to register, go to onclive.com/meetings/SOSS. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit. And don't forget to follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts so you can get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.